This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll visit with Roger Villery, former Republican Party chair. He led the GOP in Louisiana for 14 years. He's now a consultant, and we'll talk with him about what's going on in state and national politics. The gubernatorial election is October of next year. Also, Bruce Hershenson, a ranking conservative intellectual, professor at Pepperdine, former U.S. Senate candidate in California, on the president's missteps in Helsinki with Vladimir Putin. What does Bruce Hershenson think of President Trump? And we'll hear from Dr. Justin Laymiller of the Kinsey Institute. He will talk about his book, Tell Me What You Want. He has surveyed 4,000 Americans on their sex lives. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number, wherever you are. And if you're in the Baton Rouge dialing area, 297-5633. You can send us an email, talk@talklouisiana.org. We begin our discussion today with Roger Villery. And before we talk with the former chair of the Louisiana GOP, certainly congratulations are in order for former LSU star Alex Bregman, the Houston Astros third baseman. He was the most valuable player in last night's Major League All-Star game, homering in the 10th inning to seal the American League 8-6 win. And Aaron Nola of the Phillies pitched one inning and pitched better than any National Leaguer. One inning, two strikeouts, one hit, no runs for Aaron Nola, who is 12-3 for the Phils. 877-217-5757. Roger Francis Villery Jr. For 14 years, he was head of the Louisiana GOP, and we're going to talk with him about national and state matters. And there's a special election for Secretary of State coming in a few months. But before we get there, Roger Villery, the governor's election is getting close. October of next year, and so far, the Republicans don't have a candidate. What's going on?
Well, I think we're going to have a number of people that are looking at it very seriously, and we're going to have a serious candidate very soon. I believe that we're in poised to take back the governorship. We've been doing some internal polling, and we feel really comfortable that we're going to be able to field a candidate who will be extremely competitive.
Who do you think it will be?
Well, I'd rather not speculate at this time.
Well, there is wide speculation that Senator Kennedy is looking at it. Would he be a strong candidate?
Well, you know, there's a lot of people looking at it, and rather than single out one person that would or would not be a strong candidate, I'd just like to say that the party is working with a number of people. They're reaching out to them. They're in discussions. And at this point, I'm really not at liberty to speak for the party. So I'm just going to say that we're going to have a quality candidate, and I believe we'll take back the governorship.
Why do you think Governor Edwards is vulnerable?
Well, first of all, he is a tax and spend liberal. It's amazing to me that the first thing he did was try and raise taxes, and he has. He's raised billions of dollars in new taxes with the help of our legislature. And I'm very disappointed that they went along with him. Didn't try to cut a lot of areas that could have been cut. There's a lot of places that we could have saved money. We had over 1,300 unfilled positions that were budgeted, and yet they were never filled. That money then just spilled over into the black hole of bureaucracy. They had 3,300 part-time positions that were funded but never filled. That money spilled over. So right there is a couple of $100 million we wouldn't have had a raise on the back of the taxpayers of Louisiana. Also, our legislature passed a bill to audit the Medicaid expansion. And from a small sample of a few hundred people that were done, we extrapolated out that you could save somewhere around $500 to $550 million in people that were fraudulently getting Medicaid that didn't meet the qualifications because there was no penalties for them to just sign an affidavit saying they were at a certain level of income. When you check their income, they were making a lot more. So they did a small sample, and had we looked at that over 300,000 people expansion, we could have saved about $500 million right there.
All right, well, that's federal money that the state taxpayers...
No, that's not. That's our share of the federal money. In other words, the federal money, the first year pays all of it, and then subsequent years, we had to pay our percentage.
And that's a very, as you know, Roger, it's a very low percentage, like 5%.
It's growing every year.
It's so, about 5%. So you're saying Medicaid expansion was a bad thing?
It's a bad thing the way it was done, because it wasn't done properly.
Okay. Do you think Governor Jindal handled the economy and the budget better than Governor Edwards has?
Well, I think he did, because he didn't raise taxes and all. Do I think he could have done a better job? Absolutely. But I think he handled it better than Edwards has handled it, just raising taxes and not worrying about cutting expenses anyway. So, yes.
Okay. At the end, Governor Jindal also raised taxes, but he, of course, he adhered to the Grover-Norquist pledge for a very long time, and he apparently paid a price politically. But now we have tariffs that are being imposed by the President of the United States. Do you think that that will hurt the Louisiana economy?
Well, you know, the tariffs are necessary because what we have going on is abuse by other nations on our trade policies. They overcharge us in their tariffs. They don't allow our goods and services to come in. And so they penalize us every day with impunity. And I think that overall, the economy is buzzing. We've had the lowest unemployment and the most growth, whether it's in minority community or in general growth, that we've had in probably 30 or 40 years in our economy. So I think our president is doing an excellent job on making decisions on economy.
Now, the budget federally is not balanced, as is the state budget. In fact, President Trump will have one of the hugest deficits for his first 2 years of any president in history, perhaps the biggest deficit, and it's gone up considerably since President Obama left office. The debt is now at $21 trillion. Why has not the president addressed this more adroitly than he has to this point?
Well, I think he has to address it at some point. I think it's very important that he does address it. But I think he is working on one solution at a time. And right now, it was to grow the economy. That was his first order of business, to get the economy moving and put people back to work so they could make dollars and pay their personal expenses. And he's done that. And I think you're going to see him move in other areas of the economy.
877-217-5757 is your number for Roger Villery. As the whole world has discussed over the last 48 hours or so, the president has come under fire for his performance in Helsinki at the summit with Vladimir Putin. The AP story, the Associated Press, puts it this way: blistered by bipartisan condemnation of his embrace of a longstanding U.S. enemy, President Trump strained Tuesday to clarify his public undermining of American intelligence agencies, saying he simply misspoke when he said he saw no reason to believe Russia had interfered in the 2016 U.S. election. Your thoughts about how the president fared in Helsinki with Vladimir Putin at his side? Did he do well or not so well, Roger Villery?
Well, I think that that was a tough weekend for our president, and I think that he is working on clarifying his remarks. And I'll just leave it at that.
Well, did he do a good job of clarifying his remarks?
Well, I think it's a start.
Okay. Well, the Perry Mason moment that President Trump said would not happen did happen to some extent when Vladimir Putin openly said that he wanted Donald Trump to defeat Hillary Clinton. Why do you think he wanted Trump to win that election?
You'd have to ask Vladimir Putin. I have no idea. I'm not privy to his mindset.
Could it be that Hillary Clinton would have been tougher on Russia?
Well, I think she gave him most of a lot of concessions herself. So I don't say where she would be tougher on Russia. You know, look at our uranium asset she gave away to Russia. Look it up.
Now, wait a minute. That was not Hillary Clinton's doing. She was one of 9 cabinet members to sign off on that, and the president was Barack Obama, not Hillary Clinton.
She agreed to it. She signed off on it. So she's not responsible, even though she signed off on it? Come on now. Jim, you can't have it both ways.
Well, she was not the person who made that decision, and, of course, there...
But she signed off on it. She could have said, no, I don't agree with it. Even if the president would have done it, then she could have said, not in favor of that. So,
but, okay, I would concur with you that Russia is an enemy of the United States, but President Trump seems to not hold that position. Why, for example, you talk about Hillary Clinton, she's released 34 years of tax returns. Why hasn't President Trump released 1 year of his tax returns after he said he would do so?
Well, I never heard him say he would do so.
Oh, he said it. He went on about it being under a routine audit. I think the routine audit's over, and he hasn't released 1 year, Roger.
Yeah, well, you'll have to talk to the president on that again. I'm not privy to his mindset.
Well, a man you know well, Quinn Hillier, your fellow conservative from the same neck of the woods as you, has written an opinion article about the president in Helsinki, and this from a ranking conservative. He says Trump's wimpiness is exposed again in Putin debacle. He says that Putin emasculated Trump. Do you believe that?
No, I don't.
877-217-5757. We will go to the phone lines with Roger Villery, the former chair of the Louisiana Republican Party. 14 years he was at the helm of the Louisiana GOP, and it grew exponentially. When he arrived, I don't think there were any statewide elected officials other than Fox McKithen who were Republicans, and when he left, they had every office but the governor's mansion. We'll talk about it when we return. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar and Becca Dill are producing, and your number again is 877-217-5757. Another segment with Roger Francis Villery Jr., the former head of the Louisiana GOP. And as they say, the proof is in the pudding. His direction of his party for 14 years resulted in the Republican Party becoming the preeminent one in Louisiana, controlling every statewide elected office except the governor's mansion. Chris in Prairieville. Chris, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Roger Villery.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment and get Mr. Villery's opinion. And I had a comment about the Republicans' opinion of Trump, too. But as a Louisiana liberal, the way I see it, every time we get a Republican in control of the governor's mansion, there are... giveaways to large corporations. We get into these huge deficits. You can't say measure.
We didn't have any deficits on the state side. There were, you call them giveaways, but some would call them incentives. Bobby Jindal was big on that, some people criticized him for it, and I gather you're one up, Chris.
Yes, sir. Also, about the... Mr. Villery's opinion of Mr. Trump and his performance, I feel like the cognitive dissonance that must go on. I feel sorry for a lot of these conservatives because they put team above ideology. And I see so much mental acrobatics going on to try and justify things that are not, just cannot be reconciled by anyone who is logical or really educated. So, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. Well, Roger, are you putting team over what you really think?
I put Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton any day of the week. I'll be glad to vote for him 1,000 more times if it means voting for him over Hillary and her actions. And I think she put the United States at risk.
You probably would have voted for Donald Trump over any Democrat, though, over Mitch Landrieu, over Joe Biden, you name the Democrat. You probably would have voted for Donald Trump, I would think.
Well, we didn't have any Democrat run. We had Hillary Clinton, so I can only say what I'd do in that race because that was the race we had.
Okay, you could have chosen the former Republican, Gary Johnson, who was a Libertarian nominee. You could have chosen him.
Well, I could have chosen Gary Johnson, but I kind of consider him a little kook. So,
all right, Marie and Eunice. Marie, good morning. You're on with Roger Villery.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. Roger, I don't understand how you can continue that mantra being against taxes. We're the fifth lowest taxing state in the nation, and we're making strategic investments in education and infrastructure and health care. How can you say that these policies are bad for our state? We've reduced our prison population. More, a half a million people are getting health care for the first time, et cetera.
Ron?
Well, I can say when we're wasting money, I told you over $700 million worth of money that was just evaporated that we could have put to a better use. Why should we give the state more money when they're throwing away $700 million? I don't quite understand that. I'm not opposed to paying taxes. I pay a lot of taxes. I have no problem paying taxes for good services. We need good roads. We need good teachers. We need good health care. The problem we have in Louisiana is that so much of it disappears in the black hole that we need to straighten out and our expenses.
Rachel on I-12. Hi, Rachel. You're on with Roger Villery. Thanks for calling Talk Louisiana.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I would like to get Mr. Villery's opinion on former President Obama's speech at Nelson Mandela's birthday yesterday, where he ended it with saying that the denial of facts could be the undoing of democracy, and that's essentially what President Trump did during the Helsinki summit, is the denial of facts of his entire intelligence community. Thanks.
All right.
Obama went on an apology tour over in Europe and apologized for the United States over and over and over again. I don't think we need a president that apologizes for the U.S. I think we need a president that stands up for the U.S.
Dan downtown, you're on with Roger Villery. Hi, Dan.
Yes, Mr. Villery, do you think that the reputation of Bush 43, who has not been welcome at the last three GOP national conventions, will now improve by comparison with Trump's pandering to a murderous dictator like Putin?
Bush 43 was welcome. He decided not to come. I was part of the RNC, and he was welcome and asked to participate. He decided not to come. That's his decision.
Mm-hmm. Well, the president has acknowledged that Putin interfered in our election in 2016. Is that a good thing, Roger?
Oh, no. That's a terrible thing.
I mean, good that the president acknowledged it.
Oh, yeah. It's good that the president acknowledged it. It's awful that the Russians interfered in our election. So I don't think that's a good thing at all.
Jim and Walker. Hi, Jim. You're on with Roger Villery.
Well, Mr. Villery, I do keep hearing you say that you support someone who committed treason via his tweets and his press conference with Vladimir Putin.
I disagree. I don't think he committed treason. So I just disagree
treason.
With you on that point.
He's the head of the military, and as the head of the military, he should be treated just like any other person in the military that commits treason.
He didn't commit treason, so I just disagree with you on that.
Gustavo in Goodwood. Gustavo, you're on with Roger Villery. Thank you, Jim. Gustavo.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. Once again, President Trump under attack from everybody that disagrees with him. To call him a traitor or that he committed treason is preposterous, totally ridiculous. President Trump has to stand up for all of us, for Americans, for America First. Mr. Villery just said that Obama went in an apology tour, of which I have video. And I don't understand why
right.
he was never...
Well, should the president, or the current one, should he call out Vladimir Putin for what he is, a thug and a tyrant and a dangerous man to the United States of America and to the world at large?
Well, you and I don't know President Putin as Mr. Trump does. I don't...
Oh, so you're saying Putin is a good guy?
I'm not saying that at all.
I think it's definitive that he interfered in our election. He invaded countries with no provocation. He assassinates people who disagree with him. He's a very bad guy, Gustavo. He is an enemy to the United States, and he should be treated as such.
Okay, he will. You want President Trump to start dropping bombs on him?
I didn't say that.
Might as well start with,
Didn't say that, but he could at least look him in the eye and tell him what he thinks of him and what the United States thinks of him and how we're going to deal with him.
No,
Jim, you don't know what he told them when they were in their private meeting. You don't know what conversation.
Well, why did they have a private meeting, Roger?
Well, because people in that position have private meetings all the time to discuss things that they
but
want
this
to
this is the
privately.
President of the United States. We elect the president. There should be no private meeting. This should be
that's
open
ridiculous.
To the people
that's,
of America.
No, that's ridiculous because you have diplomats every day, all day long, having private meetings with diplomats from other countries. So if you're so naive that you don't understand that, Jim, and I know you're not, that just don't be spouting rhetoric.
No, we should be full of sunshine and not hide things from the American people, like tax returns. Chuck and Scott, you're on with Roger Villery. Hi, Chuck.
Yes, I have two issues I'd like him to address. One is, where is the proverbial black hole that money is wasted in, and how do we fill it in? And second, why do the Republicans and supporters of Trump always point to Obama and Clinton whenever they're trying to justify what he did?
All right. What about the incessant reflection on the previous president and the lady who got the majority of the vote in 2016? Is that old news or is that contemporary?
Oh, I think it's news. You know, it's part of history. And bring it up just states facts.
Okay, we'll return and spend a few more minutes with Roger Villery after this quick pause on Talk Louisiana. Now the news with Karen Henderson. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Roger Villery, the former chair of the Louisiana GOP, is with us for a few more minutes. We have many who wish to talk to him, and hopefully we'll get Roger back soon. But we'll try to get to a few of you before we go to Bruce Hershenson, the ranking conservative intellectual from the West Coast. Let's go, Allie, first to Lewis on Riverside. Lewis, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, Lewis. Lewis, you're on the air.
Oh, no, this is Gustavo, Jim.
All right. I am sorry, Gustavo. We just heard from Gustavo. So let's try William in Opelousas. William, good morning. You're on with Roger Villery.
Thank you for taking my call, Jim. I'm a veteran of the U.S. Air Force. And I'm old enough, I don't know how old your guess is, but I'm old enough to remember when the Soviet Union existed and how our government fought to stay strong against the Soviet Union. And Putin, to me, is trying to rebuild the Soviet Union. And we had a president who went and bowed himself, looked like he's trying to help Putin rebuild the Soviet Union. And he stands up and rail against football players in the United States of America for not standing for the flag. Now, I ask you this, do you think that what he did on Monday was patriotic when he stood up there and had the opportunity to say that he stood with our intelligence officers and he went to talking about Hillary Clinton?
All right. What do you think, Roger? Did the president... Did he do a good job or not?
Well, I'm not going to make a decision when he did a good job or not. That's not my, that's not something that I'm, going to comment on. What I would say is that he's a president of the United States. He's representing us. We don't know what he talked about in private. We know it's important to have diplomacy. You have to have diplomacy with your enemies as well as your friends. And I think that that's what he was doing. He was reaching out to Russia. Because they are a threat. They between the Russia and the United States, we have 90% of the nuclear warheads in the world. So I think we have to deal with them. I think it's important that we engage them. And, I'll leave it there.
All right. David in Atlanta. Hi, David. Please be brief. Please be brief. You're on with Roger Villery.
Mr. Villery, when Louis Gorman questioned the FBI agents honesty and integrity when he was grilled, bringing up his extramarital affair. Did you support that type of testimony, and do you think the FBI agent, because he had an affair, is less than honest? And would you apply that same standard to President Trump?
All right. Should people in our government, if they've had affairs of the heart with people who are not their wives, should they be disqualified?
Roger? Well, I think people have to make their own decision in their own way, and everybody has their own moral compass, and I think that's up to individuals to make that decision
right. on. Michael on Florida, you'll be our final caller for Roger Villery. Hi, Michael. You're on with Mr. Villery.
Hello, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. At what point, Mr. Villery, do you decide that country is more important than party? Had former President Barack Obama done the same thing you have said? It's always tough questions. You're not going to speak on the mindset, or you don't want to comment, but it's always an excuse. Thank you, and I'll take the call answer offline.
All right. Roger,
you got to work out. Not hear.
Well, he really said, you know, at what point do you put country before party? And of course,
I think you have to put country before party all the time. I think it's important.
But on the whole, you think our president is doing a good job?
I do.
Okay. Yeah. Well, thank you, Roger, and good luck. And Roger's now a consultant. As you can hear, he certainly hasn't gone away from the political realm. It's always good to talk with you, sir. Thank you, Roger.
Bye, Jim. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. We're joined now by Bruce Hershenson, as I said, a ranking conservative intellectual. He's a professor at Pepperdine University in Malibu. He lives in Los Angeles, California. Worked for Presidents Richard Nixon and Ronald Reagan very closely, and he is a man who almost was elected to the U.S. Senate in the year of 1992, losing a razor-thin race to one Barbara Boxer in a year in which Bill Clinton slammed George Bush in California, and if not for that election, Bruce Hershenson would probably have been Senator Bruce Hershenson. If you were in the Senate right now, Bruce, as a conservative Republican, would you be silent about what the president did in Helsinki, or would you be shouting from the rooftops? What would you be
doing? Neither one of them. I would be very disappointed. Well, I'll just say what I am. I'm very disappointed, whether as a senator or any office or no office. I would have been disappointed in the president's attitude and many of the statements at that joint news conference after the summit. There is, and I'll tell you why, because it may not be the reason that other people have, but there is a tradition during practically all of my lifetime, a tradition that was written by Senator Vandenberg, or said by Senator Vandenberg. He was a Republican during the Truman administration, and he said, politics end at the ocean's edge. And I believe in that. And that meant that if the president or any other member of the government or any individual, just a person who's taking a trip, when you leave the United States, you either speak well of it or you shut up. And I believe that to be true. So when I heard the president speaking ill of the Democrats, something that I do probably with regularity here in the United States, I would never do that overseas. When I heard him speak of the domestic media, ill of it, don't do that when you're overseas. When he spoke ill of the intelligence agencies, then that really got to me, the whole thing. He does strange things that I think are perhaps wise in his business context of recent years or his lifetime, that you don't do as just an American overseas. You don't act that way. And that, I believe, has been a guideline for anyone traveling overseas. I was extremely angry, I guess you'd use that term, when President Obama bowed to the King of Saudi Arabia. Shouldn't have done that. After the election loss of Hillary Clinton, she gave a speech in India, really against the president. Chelsea, her daughter, just did it to the Manchester Guardian. It has now become a tradition, and a terrible tradition, that opposition brings their opposition to foreign countries. I don't like. I have great appreciation for what Senator Vandenberg did, and not what's being done today.
What would Ronald Reagan think of this?
Terribly. He wouldn't do that. He didn't do that. You could go more recent than Ronald Reagan. You don't hear George Bush do either 41 or 43. Either of those two presidents, they don't do that. They're part of knowing that tradition of Senator Vandenberg, and it's not just knowing a phrase; it's having a feel for this country that you're not going to bring any opposition to this country to other countries.
Well, the president, as we know, the current one, he criticizes everybody. He has nicknames for people who are good Americans.
Believe me, I know.
But yet he does not do that with Vladimir Putin. There's no nickname for Vladimir Putin from Ronald Reagan, and Putin is a far greater enemy to the United States than Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio or Jeb Bush or some of the people the president has attacked viciously. Why is he treating Putin with kid gloves?
Jim, I have to say, because I want to say it and because it's true, I agree with every word you just said, every word. And it's one of those reasons that I think you may remember and you may not remember, but I put a writing candidate in. I didn't want to vote for either of the two major ones. But it was the reason that I didn't want to vote for what became President Trump was because of exactly what you said, the way that he ridiculed publicly good people in the United States simply because they opposed him as a leader. And I don't believe in doing that. Former presidents, certainly most former presidents, never did anything like that. And I just agree with every word that you said. And I would go further to this degree when you mentioned how he treated Kim Jong-un. My God, he said to Kim Jong-un, "It's a privilege to meet you." A privilege to meet that guy? My God, the man is a murderer of his own people. It's not a privilege to meet a person like that. But he does that. And as again, I think it's part of his tradition that he used of diplomacy and getting people on his side in business. But you don't do that with the United States. You support the U.S., and particularly when you're overseas, you're very careful about what you say because you don't want to do any harm to the United States.
Are we at a critical time?
Yes, we're at a critical time, not only because of what he did, but worse than what he did in one way. I mean, look, one of them is international. He was doing this in Helsinki, and that's really what I oppose so much. And I oppose the attitude of being so careless in what's said. But even worse than that is the opposition to him now. My God, how can anyone join people who are saying that this is commensurate with 9/11 and Pearl Harbor, and the man is guilty of being treasonous. I mean, these things are just, that's really out of this world to say something like that. It's just outrageous.
All right, we'll spend a few more minutes with Bruce Hershenson. When we return, 877-217-5757 is your Talk Louisiana number. We're back after this brief pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. A few more minutes with Bruce Hershenson, American political commentator, author, senior fellow at Pepperdine University School of Public Policy in Malibu, close advisor to both Presidents Ronald Wilson Reagan and Richard Milhouse Nixon. Ronaldo in North Baton Rouge. Ronaldo, you're on with Mr. Hershenson.
It's Ronaldo, Jim. How are you?
Okay, I'm sorry, Ronaldo. Thank you.
That's all right. Mr. Hershenson, with all due respect, when former, I believe he was National Security Advisor, his name slips me real quick, I think it was CNN, just that passed. But anyway, he Brennan, when he says, when director, former director Brennan says, he believes that the president's statements rises to the level of high crimes, misdemeanor, and treason. What are we supposed to expect when one of the nation's most well-respected members of the intelligence community says it? So it's not, and I despair with your comments about people.
Okay, but I never respected him to begin with. He was a member, he was a communist at one time. I thought he was a terrible director of the CIA. And generally when he speaks, I disagree with what he's saying.
Not just him, of course.
Of course not.
All right. Paul on Corsi. Paul, good morning. You're on with Bruce Hershenson. On with Professor Hershenson. You're on the air.
Yeah, I thank you for taking my call. I just wanted, this morning I realized why I had such an antipathy to our president. And the first reason is because he's a bully. And I do not like bullies.
I'm going to interrupt you. Don't ever call the president of the United States a fool.
No, he called him a bully. A bully.
A bully? I'm sorry. I thought it was a fool. The connection is terrific. Go ahead.
All right. Well, he is a bully, and some people believe that is actually a good quality, but he certainly was no bully with Vladimir Putin. If anybody got bullied in that room, it was the president.
I totally agree with you again, Jim. I just want to say, I very much agree with President Trump's policies, not the way he acts, not the kind of things he did in Helsinki, but the way that he acts, the way that he really takes policies and not just endorses old ones, but creates new ones. ISIS now is the name that means very little, if anything. It doesn't have a territory of any consequence in the Middle East anymore. And Taiwan.
All right, so you're giving the president credit for this, I gather.
Of course, I do.
Okay,
do give him credit for it. Did the former president do the kinds of things in that area of the world that he did? Not a chance. Look at Taiwan. For the first time since 1970, the latter part of 78, early part of 79. It's being treated, its leaders are being treated like leaders of any government.
All right. Well, Bruce Hershenson, it is always a pleasure. Thank you for joining us, sir, and good luck on the West Coast.
Full weapons there.
Thank you, my friend. We're joined now by a gentleman who is certainly a provocative guest, Dr. Justin Laymiller. He's a social psychologist and research fellow at the Kinsey Institute. The Kinsey Institute, by the way, was formed in 1947. To be the premier research institute on human sexuality and relationships. And this is the focus of Dr. Lay Miller's book, Tell Me What You Want. And good morning to you, sir. I understand you're joining us from a few miles away, Dr. Lay Miller.
Yes, it's afternoon here. I'm in Spain attending the International Academy of Sex Research meeting, but happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
In Spain, the International Academy of Sex Research, and I'm sure they're buzzing about your book. You surveyed how many people?
It was almost 4,200 Americans.
Do Americans look at sex differently than people in other countries?
There are certainly a lot of cultural differences in terms of what's considered an acceptable sexual behavior, what's considered taboo, what's considered attractive in terms of the bodily traits, the psychological characteristics. All of this varies cross-culturally, but in my book I focused specifically on Americans and what it is that they desire and how that's shaped by our personalities, our culture, and also our evolutionary history.
The book is Tell Me What You Want from Dr. Justin Lay Miller, The Science of Sexual Desire and How It Can Help You Improve Your Sex Life. Most Americans, you say, are not getting the sexual activity they desire. What's going on with most Americans in this realm?
So I asked people to describe their favorite fantasy of all time in their own words, and then I looked at whether or not they said they wanted to act on that fantasy in the future and whether they had shared it with anyone else. And what I found was that there was a big discrepancy between fantasy and reality, in the sense that the vast majority of people, when they were talking about their fantasies, wanted to act on them but had never done so, and many had not even shared them with a partner either, because there's a lot of shame and guilt and embarrassment that's tied up in our desires. So the book is all about helping people to better understand their desires, where they come from, and how they might communicate about them with their partners.
Do men and women have different points of view on this?
They do, but actually they're not quite as different as the gender stereotypes make them out to be. It turns out that most of us, regardless of gender, are fantasizing about the same things. And in the book, it challenges a lot of the stereotypical beliefs we have about men and women. For example, I find that men, most of the time, have some emotional need that they're trying to meet through their fantasies. It's not just about some basic mechanical sex act. It's about feeling desired and validated and wanted. So there's a big emotional component to men's fantasies that is often overlooked. And at the same time, I find that women's fantasies are much more adventuresome than most people expect as well.
That is interesting. And you surveyed people from 18 to 87, 4,200 Americans, and you also asked them their party affiliation. Now, before we get to what you found out about Democrats and Republicans, people are reluctant to talk about their sex lives. How in the world did you get people to open up to you and talk about the most personal aspects of their humanity?
Sure. So I was surveying people anonymously online. And when people are talking about a very sensitive subject like this, it's really only when they have that anonymity and a guarantee that they're not going to be personally identified that they're willing to open up. So people were willing to tell me things that they weren't willing to tell their actual partners. So it was really all about just providing that sense of security when it comes to talking about their desires that allowed them to open up.
And you say there are distinct differences in the sex fantasies of Democrats and Republicans.
I did find that in the survey. I wasn't necessarily expecting it, but I go where the data takes me. And what I found was that Democrats and Republicans were fantasizing about some different things. One of the things I found was that Republicans tended to have more fantasies about taboo activities, such as infidelity, compared to Democrats. Democrats, one fantasy that they had more of than Republicans was BDSM activities. Democrats also had more fantasies about emotional fulfillment compared to Republicans. So there were some interesting differences there that emerged.
Well, it's an interesting topic and one that I'm sure all Americans think about. But you say that 97% of Americans report having some kind of sexual fantasy.
Correct, and most people have multiple fantasies. So I focus in the book on people's biggest or most common fantasy, but I also explore hundreds of other people, places, and things that they might have fantasized about.
And women, you contend, are more likely to fantasize about where they're having sex. Men, not so much. Why is that?
Right. So that is a really interesting gender difference, in that women in their fantasies focus more on the setting, where it takes place, whereas men tend to focus more on a specific person in their fantasies. So I think the difference is partially explained by the fact that women tend to see themselves as the objects of desire. And so whereas men tend to see themselves as acting on an object of desire. So I think that helps to explain why men are a little more focused on a specific person. But when it comes to why women focus more on the setting, I think it's because women fantasize a little bit more frequently than men about having emotional needs being met. So an intimate connection or passion with another partner. And I think the setting is often this really important key in setting a mood state that's going to help meet that emotional need.
And perhaps surprisingly, the fantasy that I see more people saying they have more than any other is kissing, just kissing, men and women. This is interesting.
In terms of the specific activity, I did look at things comprehensively, and kissing does appear in most people's the vast majority of people's fantasies. Interestingly, I don't really get into this in the book, but kissing is not something that is universal across cultures. In fact, anthropologists have found that kissing doesn't exist in most cultures around the world. So it's surprising in terms of how different the sexual practices are in different areas. And that means that our culture also influences what's going to appear in our fantasies.
The book is Tell Me What You Want from Dr. Justin Leigh Miller. It's been a pleasure. Thank you, Dr. Leigh Miller. We'll let you get back to work in Madrid. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll be talking more about what's going on in our world. We thank our guests, Dr. Leigh Miller, Dr. Hershenson, and Roger Villery. Until tomorrow, for Ali Baltazar and Becca Dill, I'm Jim Inkster. Stay tuned.